Rod Nordland filed a report for the New York Times, July 1st, 2018, Dateline Casablanca, Morocco. Some things get better as time goes by. Rick's Cafe may be one of them. Chris Kelly of Bath, England, stopped there one recent day for lunch on his way to a vacation in southern Morocco and said he was impressed at how lovingly restored the old place was. It was just like the one in the movie Casablanca. Like many visitors here, Mr. Kelly was surprised to learn that Rick's Café Américain never existed, except on a Hollywood movie lot, where the classic film starring Humphrey Bogart and Ingrid Bergman was made. It was 1942, the world was at war, and the city was occupied by the Axis powers. Rick's was just the figment of a writer's imagination. The owner and founder of the current Rick's Cafe in Casablanca is a former American diplomat, Kathy Krieger. "We wanted to make it everything it was in the movie and then some," she said. A dozen white arches supported by columns frame the main dining room under a three-story octagonal cupola, and green leather bumpers grace the curved bar top. Palms in the corners, hanging brass chandeliers, beaded table lamps, and a baby grand piano tucked into an archway lend to the period-authentic scene. The incarnation of Rick's Café has nothing to do with World War II, but a lot to do with the modern-day war on terrorism and Ms. Krieger's own small role in it. It also has much to say about the enduring power of a great work of art to affect destinies in real life. Like a lot of Americans, Ms. Krieger was long a fan of Casablanca, which often makes critics' lists of the 10 greatest movies of all times. She saw it first in 1974 at a movie festival in her hometown, Portland, Oregon. At the end, everyone stood up and applauded, she said. Ms. Krieger later joined the State Department, which posted her as a commercial attaché to this Atlantic coastal port, Casablanca, Morocco's business center and biggest city. She was stunned to discover there was no Rick's Café here, which seemed to her a missed marketing opportunity. Then came the September 11th attacks and what she considered a backlash in America against Muslims. She wanted to fight that backlash, she said. She decided that a good way would be to show that an American woman operating alone in a Muslim society could start a business like Rick's Café to act as an exemplar of tolerance, a refuge in a troubled world. Ms. Krieger just passed away on July 26th, leaving Rick's Café, as she described it, a refuge in a troubled world. We're about to hear a story about an organization using this work of art, the movie Casablanca, to help them create a refuge in a troubled world for children in our midst. Interestingly, among those who loved the city at the time of the movie, Casablanca was known as Casa, and in a totally different context in our contemporary world, Casa stands for Court-Appointed Special Advocates. And each year they do, for one evening, what Kathy Krieger did in Morocco, and that's to recreate Rick's Café Américain, not only to give us a convivial and entertaining experience, a chance to imagine ourselves there in those days and times, but to, in a subliminal way, conjure up the movie and one of its messages about how we come as individuals to do the right thing. Finding ways for the arts, in one example we'll hear about, to serve as a passport for a young woman out of the darkness of her present to a more hopeful future. And doesn't that echo what we love about the movie? An evening in Casablanca will be held September 20th in 44th, right across the river from Wilkes-Barre. John Achukevich, executive director of Casa of Luzerne County, and Annie Ellis, Casa Advocate Coordinator, paid a visit to the WVIA studios to introduce us to Casa and invite us to Casablanca.
I always begin with the acronym because I assume, you know, Casa people know what it means, right? But the acronym stands for Court-Appointed Special Advocates. So we originated in Luzerne County in 2013, became a 501c3 in 2014. And our mission is to, you know, recruit, select, train, and support volunteers from our community who then become appointed by a judge for children who've been determined to be dependent. And the reason I make that distinction about dependent children, they're not delinquent. These are not children who've committed crimes. These are children who, because of abuse and neglect, are without proper parental care and control, and many of whom find themselves in foster care. So none of the children that we advocate for want to be in the position that they're in. You know, every child deserves and wants and needs a loving home. So our mission is to utilize the time and commitment of our volunteer advocates to assist the court in identifying a safe, permanent, nurturing home for these children just as soon as possible. Because in Luzerne County alone, there are 450, 470 children in foster care because of abuse and neglect. Just in our county, and that number, sadly, has increased by about 50 in the last 12 months. So it's not a situation that is obviously changing for the better. The unique challenge of our program is that when the judge appoints a volunteer advocate to a case, one, that volunteer advocate is empowered by the court to have access to all information to that child, medical records, behavioral records, therapeutic records, and develop a connection with the child so that when these cases are reviewed by the court every 6 months, the volunteer advocate's in a position to assist the judge with a recommendation for that child's permanency and best interest. The uniqueness about and the challenge of the CASA program is when the judge appoints an advocate to a case, it's to one case and to one child or one sibling group. So it's almost a one-to-one ratio between the advocate and the children and the child. So it's a very intense experience, and it's also one-to-one. So given the numbers of children in foster care, as I mentioned, over 400, that means in order for us to fulfill our mission of an advocate for every child, we're looking to have more volunteer advocates. So currently we have 33 active advocates providing advocacy for 50 children. Now we've made some inroads and some progress with more volunteer advocates, but we're always seeking more. And thankfully we have with us today Annie Ellis. Annie is not only a member of our staff recently as a volunteer coordinator, she has served in the role as a volunteer, a CASA volunteer, for the past slightly more than 2 years. And she can share with you, I think, some of the impact that she has had in the two cases she's been involved with. I can easily tell you about the need that exists for volunteer advocates. She can personally talk about the impact, not only on the kiddos that she's advocated for, but also, I think, herself.
Absolutely. In the 2 years that I've had the distinct privilege to be called a court-appointed special advocate, and I do consider it a privilege, what is really eye-opening for me, as John said, the need, but we find these children, they come to us, they've already had their worst day, and they've been removed by, most of the time, they've been removed from their home because of abuse or neglect, and the system is so difficult to navigate, right? And it does involve appearances in court. You know, the court is charged with the duty of overseeing these children who have been determined to be dependent, meaning they are now in the custody of Children and Youth Services, and that's who's overseeing. The system is difficult to navigate, and it's really important, what I've found as an advocate, to be able to step in and to get to know that child. And so impact, how do we gauge that? Sometimes there's a big impact. The first child I advocated for was a little boy who, at the age of 9, was beaten so badly by his own mother that when he got to school one morning, his teacher called 911 and he was taken out of his home. And I came into the picture about 2 years after his foster placement. And I have spent the last 2 years with him through a lot of highs and lows. But the impact there, you know, we all hope for this. The greatest thing I can tell you is that on April 25th of this year, he was adopted by his very loving foster mother. And that's a process that I was only too glad to walk with him. And it was difficult at times. I now advocate for a 16-year-old who has been out of school for 2 years. She's been truant for 2 years. And you say to yourself, you know, how can a child be out of school for 2 years at that age? Who's paying attention? Who's not paying attention? The first time I met her was at a hearing, and I was struck by everybody was talking about her and she won't and she can't and she won't. And I thought, what's going on? And I have to tell you, the next day I had the occasion to visit her home for the first time. And When I left that home, I went out to my car and I put my head on my steering wheel and I cried because I understood the circumstances that she was in, the difficulties she was encountering. It wasn't this self-motivated, I'm not going to do anything. It was a lot of her life circumstances. So I never asked her. I have never asked her why she won't go to school. And I have said to her, I understand. I understand the difficulties. But we need to find a way for you. We need to find a path. There is success there for you, but we need to find a path. I've also said to her, and I repeat this a lot, your past is not your future. Anything is possible, and I will be right here with you. And I have to tell you, it's been less than a year that I've been involved with her, but I've seen such a change. And I think for the first time, she feels hopeful, and some opportunities have come her way. For example, what I discovered in spending time with her is that she's this amazing sketch artist, an unknown talent, had never been explored. She kind of kept it to herself, and she would start to show me her sketches. And through not exactly a coincidence, we've been able to get her involved in art lessons. A very generous anonymous donor has taken that on, and it's opened up a world for her where she finally sees a path to some success. And that's a big impact.
Does she like to do portraits? Does she do landscape? What kinds of things does she
do? She does unbelievable self-portraits, which are really compelling and really powerful. She does a lot of sketches of what she sees around her in the world. But I have to tell you, Erica, until this point, she's been doing them from her dark bedroom. And so now we see that there's another world out there. And when I told her about this opportunity to take these art lessons and that it was going to happen, she cried. And she said, you know, how could something so good happen to me? And I said, this is what I'm telling you, anything's possible.
And I would just add to that story too, for this 16-year-old girl, she's also expressed an interest to Annie. Will you help me get my driver's license? Will you help me get working papers? She is now more confident, a desire for more independence, and I think now a belief in herself that she can in fact have a different and a better life than perhaps she otherwise would have. And Annie's played a significant role in walking with her and spending a tremendous amount of time with her. And that's what I referred to earlier about that opportunity for that one-on-one connection that the volunteer advocate can make with the child. And I think Annie would probably also agree that she herself has grown from this volunteer experience, and it's had an impact on her personally.
Absolutely, absolutely. I have gotten way more than I have given. There's no doubt about that. You spend some time out of your comfort level, right? And that's where growth happens. And I can say that for sure. And, you know, as John mentioned earlier, I have recently become part of the staff of CASA of Luzerne County, which is an opportunity that I'm so grateful for to enlarge my advocacy. And what I say now is, as an advocate, you know, in the 2 years that I've been an advocate, I've advocated for two children. And I know they're two very difficult stories. Now, as an advocate supervisor, I know about 50 really more difficult stories. But what keeps me awake at night are the 400 stories that I don't know yet. And the need is there. And it's right here in your backyard.
When you talk about someone's taking the step to become a volunteer, what kind of training is involved?
So the training is actually a curriculum designed by the National CASA organization out of Seattle, Washington, and we're a member affiliate of the National CASA organization, which has, as I said, been around for 40 years. And so we utilize that curriculum, and it'll touch upon subjects like the role of the CASA in court, the foster care system, abuse and neglect, trauma, domestic violence, substance abuse, educational advocacy. It's a curriculum that is about 30 hours. And also there's pre-service work involved with the classes that is also part of the National CASA training. On average, it's about 1.5 hours per class. So it's a sizable time commitment. But because of the importance of the role, it's obviously necessary. So we have our next training class that'll begin on October 3rd. And we'll do them Wednesday evenings with also one Saturday thrown in there. So people who may have an interest, please consider visiting our website at luzernecasa.org. Call the office, 570-855-2247, because we'll still be accepting applications for that fall class through September 15th. We usually do a spring and fall training, and this past spring, we had 14 people complete the training. So it's our largest training class ever, and we're hoping to continue to build on that. And one of the initiatives that we've developed is what's called 90 and 20. So we do two classes a year, So at the end of 2020, we'll have 6 classes, and our hope is to have 15 new trained advocates in each class so that in 3 years we have 90 volunteer advocates, giving us the capacity to serve more than 100 children. As Annie has said, you know, the need is not going away anytime soon.
You started with the acronym CASA and explained to us what that was, court-appointed special advocates, but you each have used the word home, and we know CASA in Spanish is home, so it's at the very heart of what you all do. But also we know, because you've been here before, John and Annie, we're welcoming you this round, you also take that acronym CASA and turn it into something very special and invite us to join you in celebrating young people and successes like you've mentioned, Annie. And that's Casablanca.
Casablanca. I was wondering when you're going to get around to that. That's such a special event for us. You know, it's hard to believe it's our 3rd annual Casablanca event, and we've had tremendous success the past 2 years. And we're really looking forward to this year's event Thursday, September 20th, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the room at 944. We'll have some great food catered by the Westmoreland Club, some great cocktails. What's really nice, too, there are some non-gambling gaming tables. It's a fun night. People can play roulette, craps, blackjack, and not lose any money. And we'll also, for the first time, we're going to be presenting an impact video where a mother of some children who've had the benefit of a CASA is going to share some of her story about the difference that CASA made in her children's lives. So we're really excited about that event and grateful for the co-chairs, Lynn McCarthy and Stephanie Crothers, doing a terrific job preparing and as well as their committee. So they can go online at our website, and it should just be a relaxing, fun night. And you can stay for 3 hours or you can stop in for an hour, whatever you would like. And it's a very short program that we'll have. So it's just an opportunity for people to come casually and enjoy each other's company and just have some fun.
And in the past, you have suited up in a way that resembles a certain movie star who might in some way be connected with Casablanca.
Yes, I will be donning my white tuxedo jacket a la Humphrey Bogart.
Will there be decor that is evoking the film?
There will be Casablanca decor. And we'll also be, as I understand with this venue, it's got a screen setup of 6 feet by 12 feet. I believe the movie's going to be running silently, of course, in the background.
Fun. Annie, do you know Casablanca? Have you had fun there?
I do, actually. I have to tell you, I've been present and had a great time all first year, second year, and I'm looking forward to the 3rd year. I had the privilege of speaking the last 2 years. It really is an incredible experience, the transformation and the theme with the movie playing and the piano music. The first Casablanca I walked into, there were girls with cigarette boxes and, you know, the headbands and selling hand-rolled cigars. So it's really quite something culturally.
That was the first time last year they brought in a company to do some cigar rolling, and they're back by popular demand to do it as well. And there'll be some Casablanca rappers for those cigars. We did have a pianist also played again Sam throughout, and as well as kind of Casablanca music. There were Casablanca, as you said, decor. And the scenery, there'll be lanterns, there'll be some flowers. It'll be as close as we can image Rick's Cafe to the event.
John Atrakevich, Executive Director of CASA of Luzerne County, and Annie Ellis, CASA Volunteer Advocate Coordinator, speaking with us about an evening in Casablanca, Thursday, September 20th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the room at 900 in 44th, and that's across the river from Wilkes-Barre. For more information on the web, luzernecasa.org, and that's C-A-S-A, luzernecasa.org. The event is Thursday, September 20th, 6 to 9 p.m., the room at 900 in 44th, just across the river from Wilkes-Barre. Their motto for this event, you might imagine, is, "Here's looking at you, kids," plural. And it's an evening in Casablanca, September 20th, 6 to 9 p.m. on the web, luzernecasa.org, luzernecasa.org.